done fell right down that rabbit hole. So reality is questionable. Try, but you just can't let it go. These two right here put on a show. It's paranormal overload with Southern hospitality. Haunted murder mayhem tip while discussing immortality. Locations with a dark past, history that comes to life. Hillbillies with a knack for everything that goes bump at night. Overthinking if you by yourself, these two will have you turning on the lights. Mixing in a little comedy to make sure it all fits in just right. Hey.
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. Now here's your hosts, Jerry and Tracy Hall, and their dog Ninja.
Sometimes their cat, Freddy, but never the ferrets.
If you want nightmares, you are in the right place.
I couldn't sleep last night after listening.
This podcast is genuinely scary.
That's what people are saying about Frightful. And if you'd like a few nightmares of your own, then how about you step this way? Hi, I'm Peter Laws, and I'm an author, journalist, and the host of Frightful, the podcast that is giving folks the serious creeps. From spine-tingling tales of the paranormal and shocking true crime to disturbing cults, possessions, and the forgotten horrors of history, Frightful is the podcast that pulls you into the darkness with immersive music, sound effects, and storytelling that is designed with one thing in mind: to get under your skin. With new episodes every other Sunday, you'll have plenty to keep that heart rate high. The good news is it's available free wherever you get your podcasts. The bad news is that after listening to this show, you might just have to spend a few more cents on electricity. After all, you're going to be sleeping with the lights on. So search Frightful in your podcast apps, and I will see you there in the dark.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 397 of Hillbilly Horror Stories. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Tracy.
Tracy, as usual, we want to start off thanking all of our military and civil servants all over the world, no matter which country you represent. Thanks for all that you men, women, and service animals do for us on a daily basis.
That's so true. You guys are so important to us. And, you know, I saw a couple of veterans yesterday and thanked them for their service. And, I mean, I wish y'all could just see the look on their face. I mean, it's like, wow, thank you for saying that. It really means a lot, you know. And they just, I mean, their whole face lights up. So, you know, if you guys do get a chance to do that, just do that, because it really makes them feel great. You know, but we just pray for you guys all the time, and thank you for watching our backs. We love you guys.
Absolutely. Also, Tracy, we, and I want to say, we have a great group of people.
No, we have the most amazing group.
I mentioned somebody last week that's struggling in rehab, and I had Sam Farrell, who we love to death. He reached out to me and was like, hey, you know, if you want to give my number out to him, you can. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, that's something I've got experience helping people with. That's the group that we got. We have people volunteering to personally help with somebody. And look, I'm not trying to sound jerkish by saying this, but it's not easy to take on the responsibility like that. Mm-hmm. We'd all like to be able to say, hey, we want to help people, but to really be committed to helping somebody who's going through something. I mean, I've seen Sam in the past with others have to take calls at 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. That's what you sign up for when you do something like that. And he's been there, done that, and then he'll turn right around and say, I'll do it again.
He does. I know it. He's amazing. And it's good that we have, you know, awesome people like that. That does, you know, yeah, do take Sam, the time
Sam's,
out.
Sam's the one that happened this time, but it's, there are hundreds.
Oh, yeah.
In our group that will gladly do something like that.
Yeah. Very blessed. And we're so thankful for all of you.
But we want to let people know, if you're struggling with something, please get help. Whether it be talking to somebody, whether it be getting professional help, whether it's just calling the, you know, the crisis hotline, whatever the situation is, it can be overcome.
You know, that's right. So, we've got a lot of mouths in this group. So,
yeah. So, yeah, the group is a great place to just go in. And you can post anonymously now.
Mm-hmm. So, oh, I know. I've noticed that. So,
you can post anonymously if you want to. But just talk to somebody. I promise you'll feel better. And if it's not us or the group, Tracy, what can they do?
They can call the crisis hotline at 988. Or you can text at 741-741.
And you know, I didn't go back and listen for sure. I'm going off memory, so I could be wrong. But I don't think we gave out the number last week, and if we didn't, I apologize.
Oh, I thought I did, but
you,
I don't know.
You may have in my head for some reason. Mm-hmm. It just struck me that we didn't, and this was like 2 or 3 days later. So
oh, okay. Well, I apologize.
I don't know, but if we didn't, then, you know, I apologize. All right, Tracy. I heard a really cool story about a witch in Appalachia. Or Appalachia. We go through this every time.
I know.
The Appalachian Mountains. I'm going to stick with Appalachian this show, but it might be different the next time we do an episode.
I think we all know.
It's going to be different by the time we get finished with this one. I already know. So anyway, I heard this story, and I decided I was going to research a few more to see if I could do a complete episode. So I've got, okay, I'm going to say I've got three of them, but I actually have about five. But the last two I'm going to do from memory.
Oh.
Because I wanted to try that. They're shorter stories. There's mm-hmm. no reason why I need all the notes on there. Mm. Because these two stories didn't have a lot of explicit details. When I write all these notes, it's because of dates and uh-huh. exact names. And these stories were not, you know, they weren't full of dates and stuff. It's like late 1800s. I can remember that, I think.
Well, good notes. For you, because I sure wouldn't have been able to. You'd had a whole different story if I tried to tell it.
I'm also going to say I'm going to cheat a little bit because...
Oh, you're not supposed to tell.
Well, no, two of these stories are more... There'll be five stories in total, and actually three of them are in Appalachia.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other two are... They're mountain witch stories,
mm-hmm.
but technically they're kind of outside of Appalachia. Okay. So we technically should call this the mountain witch stories instead of yeah. Appalachian witch.
There you go.
But either way.
Whatever.
All right. And then I'm going to start off on a tangent. So the first one we're going to talk about takes place in the Blue Ridge Mountains. And yes, the Blue Ridge Mountains are a sub-range of the Appalachian Mountains. And for the record, the Blue Ridge Mountains get their name because they project somewhat of a kind of a hazy blue tint when you look at them from a distance.
Oh, I thought it was because you didn't drink the beer till the mountains turned blue.
That's Coors. That would be the Rocky Mountains.
Oh, either way.
Tracy, did you realize that the Great Smoky Mountains are a sub-range of the Blue Ridge Mountains?
I did.
I don't think you did.
Oh, my gosh.
You just sat here and thought Coors was, which was a Rockies commercial you were getting here. Anyways. All right, so the Blue Ridge Mountains, they stretch for 615 miles. They start in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. They run through parts of Maryland, Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, and they end in Mount Oglethorpe in Georgia. And do you know why I'm telling you this?
No. Because if I said I knew, then you would say, no, you don't. So go ahead.
Well, you don't on this one. Because, because you know what state that was not mentioned in that group? West Virginia.
Well, don't we? Blue Ridge Mountains.
Exactly.
West Virginia.
So you're still in my thunder. Step back.
Nah.
So the Blue Ridge Mountains are not in West Virginia.
John Denver lied.
You know what else is just barely in West Virginia? The Shenandoah River.
Shenandoah. He must have been like drinking or something.
No, I'm getting to this. At least why I think. So I'm telling you this because West Virginia's state song is Country Roads by John Denver. And I'm under the impression that that song is not about the state West Virginia. He's talking about the western part of Virginia.
Oh, okay.
So you see what I'm saying?
Uh-huh, I do.
So West Virginia, it would be like West Kentucky. It's not a state.
That just sounds stupid, West Kentucky.
It's right. It should be Western Virginia, but for whatever reason, he's mentioning things that really aren't in West Virginia, but they are in Virginia. So that's, I don't know. That's just my little thing. It just aggravates me every time I hear it. But I'm sure somebody will write and say, you're wrong. You're wrong because I saw an interview with it. Whatever the case is, I'm never going to believe it.
Okay.
So, all right. Sorry about the tirade, but. Witch, please.
Matt Jones is going to get mad at you for that.
So our story first story, anyway, takes place in Fanning County, Georgia. The subject, the Blue Ridge Witch. The Blue Ridge Witch is still talked about even to this day. Now, her real name was Elizabeth Tilly Bradley. So let's start with some history. In the 1750s, the Creek Native Americans lived alongside white settlers right here in the area. And this was actually a very peaceful arrangement that they had.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of shared stuff together. They helped each other out.
Very nice. There was little, should be.
Yeah, there was little to no issues. In fact, members from each one of these groups would go on to marry one another. So they intermingled, we will say. Two prominent mixed families would actually come from these marriages. One was the Stanley family. They invented pink cups.
Stop it.
The other was the Tilly family. Now, eventually, the Cherokee Native Americans would move into the area, and they weren't quite as friendly as far as being neighborly as what the Creeks were. So this made most of the Creeks and the European settlers to move away.
Okay.
The Stanleys resettled in an area that they named Stanley Gap. The Tillys moved a few miles further than that, in a place that they named Tilly's Bend.
Okay.
Now, the Tillys also established a church in 1858, and they called it Tilly Bend Church. The imagination was really flowing back then.
I know, right? Well, you might as well name it after yourself.
I guess. So, Elizabeth Bradley was a Tilly before marrying Jason Bradley. So, you following me on that?
Yes.
They ended up moving to Tilly Bend. That's when Elizabeth and her husband, Jason, and their 8 children settled there.
Hello, get off of her.
Elizabeth was known to be a Creek witch doctor.
A what?
A Creek witch doctor.
Oh, a Creek?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Creek.
I thought you said Creek.
Yeah, no. No. She was both feared and respected in the community for her prowess and magical ways. She'd healed many in that town. Some were sick or they just needed help, and she was always there to lend a hand. She served as a local healer to not only her town, but the surrounding towns for many years. But that would all change in the late 1800s. Tracy, have you ever heard of the feud between the Hatfields and the McCoys?
Yeah.
Well, that was in West Virginia. So, there's one thing they actually had. Anyways, in the late 1800s, the Stanleys and the Tillys had their own little feud similar to what those guys had. Elizabeth would get smack dab in the middle of it.
Sucks for her.
Well, how did this happen, you might ask? Or you might just say sucks for her. Well, one of her daughters was married to a Stanley, and the other was married to a Tilly.
Good grief.
One Sunday morning, members of the Stanleys, they came to Tilly Bend Church while there was a service going on, and they just started shooting the entire place up.
Stop.
Several church members were killed, including the preacher and Elizabeth's oldest daughter.
What in the heck? That ain't gonna get you into heaven, people.
Well, of course, revenge was on the Tillys' minds after this. So the Tillys raided the Stanleys' village right in the middle of the night. Unfortunately, Elizabeth's other daughter was killed. Her other daughter was pregnant at the time with what would have been her Elizabeth's granddaughter or grandson. I don't know. So Elizabeth lost 2 daughters and a grandchild in a matter of a few days. She was completely devastated. So as you could imagine, Elizabeth was pissed off.
Mm-hmm.
So much so that she cursed both settlements, the Tillys and the Stanleys. She said that from that moment on, no child would live in either town. Well, of course, this was just the rambling of a mother in mourning, you know, as far as they were concerned. Or was it? neither family really paid it much attention. They carried on with their lives. But that was until the first stillborn baby arrived.
Aw. Shouldn't put a curse on babies.
Well. But that would just be the first of many stillborns. In fact, every baby born that year to either family, none of them made it past infancy.
Wow.
Coincidence? Who knows? But after that year, both families decided to join forces. And they went to Elizabeth's house. They drug her to the cemetery that was at the church. And they hung her from a tall tree right in the center of the cemetery. They cut her down. And they buried her right where her body fell. She was also buried facing west. That was actually customary for burying witches at that time.
No kidding.
Yeah, I don't know where half these superstitions come from back in the day, but that was the thing. Bury them facing west, and I guess they can't come back. Now, before she died, she warned everyone that she would be back. And again, silly rambling from a dying woman.
Why would they think it's a silly rambling? Especially after everything that's just gone on.
Well, the next year, the same thing happened.
All the babies
were stillborn.
Oh, man.
So the children were still dying. So now we've got 2 years straight of no babies living.
Oh.
The towns started to wonder if Elizabeth had come back. They were convinced that her evil spirit had come back and possessed her sister's body. So they killed her too.
What? Dude, come on. That sister did.
So Tracy, the question is,
I don't even know what to say about that. That poor sister.
Again, if I had a dollar every time you said, I don't know what to say about that.
Oh.
The question is this story true? Normally, I would say that it's just folklore, but this case at least has some evidence that it might be true or partially true. That church is still there.
Oh.
And it still has bullet holes in it.
Uh-uh.
Yes.
Ooh, I'd like to see that.
And at the base of that tree that's in the center of the cemetery, Elizabeth Bradley is actually buried there. So who knows?
Wow. What the heck, man? I mean, can you imagine just living back in the day? Like, they just like, well, you're a relative to a witch, so we're just going to go ahead and kill you.
Yeah,
I would have been like, dude, no, I'm a distant relative. They don't count. Yeah. But even though it was her sister. Dang, God, that is so scary.
All right, so let's move on to our next story. It also has a Native American tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to go to Natchez Trace Parkway. That's a very long road. It starts in Tennessee at the foothills of South Appalachia, and it goes all the way to the lower Mississippi River.
Oh, that is a long road. I bet it's not longer than Highway 59 in Texas, though. Woo! And there's nothing to look at, like nothing. Go ahead, sorry.
You do hate that trip to Texas.
Oh, man.
So if you're visiting and you decide you want to camp out, a little bit.
No.
There's a campground at a place called Witch Dance.
Oh.
This is actually in a national park.
Oh, is that right?
So just south of Tupelo, Mississippi is a campground. The sign says, I'm going to read you exactly. You know how you'll have like the brown signs that are always at the state parks like, with the golden letters?
Mm-hmm.
This is what the sign says. Witch Dance. The very name conjures visions of eerie midnights, swirling black capes and brooms stacked adjacent to a nearby tree. The old folk say that witches once gathered here to dance, and that wherever they touched the ground, the grass withered and died, never to grow again. Impossible? Maybe so, but look around. Look for a hidden spot where no grass grows. That's what's on the sign.
Well, that's a long sign.
It is a long sign.
I think it's cool, though, that the brooms have their own parking space.
All right, so that says a little bit about the legend, but I'm going to tell you the whole story. So witch dance has a very long and complicated history of witchcraft and occult practice, and of course, supernatural phenomenon. Don't.
I like, had my lips puckered. I was ready to.
Like all of the southern region of Appalachia and South Natchez Trace, yes, I cheated. Like I said, this isn't technically in Appalachia, but it's close. It's just outside. But it was once home to Native Americans. And the focus of this story will be the Hopewell tribe. So as they were moved off their land,
uncool,
they followed their spiritual leader, who actually carried a bag filled with ancestors' bones.
Ooh.
He also carried a medicine stick. They were searching for a new place to live.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They were also accompanied by a white dog. So this dog would actually lead them to food sources while they were trying to find, you know, moving along, trying to find a place to live.
The dog would find food.
Each night, the leader of the Hopewells would find a place that they were going to stop, and then he would shove the medicine stick in the ground, as if to say, like this, here we are.
Medicine's what?
Medicine stick. What did I say?
Medicine stick.
Stick.
Medicine yes. stick.
Medicine
stick. Medicine dick.
One night, when he laid the stick down, he just laid it down, it stood straight up on its own.
Oh, cool.
So the Hopewell people took this as a sign that this area of Natchez Trace was now their new home. They buried their ancestors' bones in these large mounds, these burial mounds that you've probably seen.
Yes.
So they would have a final resting place. Well, eventually, the tribe would split into two separate tribes. Now, you might not have ever heard of the Hopewell tribe, but you've probably heard of the two tribes that they became. The northern tribe became the Chickasaw.
Mm-hmm.
And the southern became the Choctaw.
Tim McGraw sings about that.
I knew it. I knew you were going to go there. So both of these tribes would report fearing this area that is now known as Witch Dance. They always kept a safe distance, and they did claim that before their arrival, that witches would do ceremonies and stuff there.
Okay.
At these ceremonies, they would gather and dance and practice their dark arts.
Okay. Do they do, like, rain dances, I wonder?
That's not dark arts, unless they're praying for or trying to get a flood.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Now, according to the natives, wherever the witch's feet touched, the grass would no longer grow. And even today, if you wander around, there are all kinds of spots where the grass doesn't grow, which is why the sign says that. It's sporadic, but it looks like someone flattened the areas out where that is. So the natives were scared of that place, but not everyone would heed the warning. In fact, there were two brothers in the area. They were the Hart brothers. Tracy, they had a reputation, to say the least.
A bad one?
Yes. Oh. Not only were the Harps evil men, they are sometimes called America's first serial killers. They would rob and kill women and children. The bigger of the brothers was known as, get this, Big Harp.
Ooh.
On this day in question, the brothers were traveling down Natchez Trace. They came upon the area of Witch Dance. There, some Native American guides that were helping them warned them that the barren spots were not to be touched or messed with in any way, or there would be severe consequences. Well, he told the brothers that the witches could curse the person who taunts them, but Big Harp, being a big jerk, jumped off his horse. He started trampling one of the spots, laughing like a madman, and mocking the witches.
Well, what an idiot.
A few weeks later, he paid the price. He was tracked down and killed by a man that he had wronged a couple of times. He was beheaded. His head was then nailed to a tree as a symbol that justice had been served.
Oh, gosh. Wow.
It's then claimed that Big Harp's head was taken by a witch doctor and ground up to be used for medicine and other potions.
That's gross. So what Little Bro do?
I don't know. I don't have any info on Little Bro. So the legend here...
Oh, that's so gross.
The legend here is that if you go to Witch Dance and you tell the story of the Harp brothers, you can hear the witches laughing.
Good. That's what you get.
So with that being said, we're going to take a quick sponsor break and then we'll be back with three more stories.
All right.
All right, Tracy. Of course, we have to do a story from Gatlinburg.
I love Gatlinburg. We'll never see it again.
That is not true.
I bet you it is.
You have the worst attitude when it comes to stuff.
Well, I mean, we couldn't be any farther away than we are now, so.
Sure we could. We could be in Miami.
Well, that's
true.
We'd
be about 3 hours from here. All right, so actually, I think it's not, Miami's farther than 3 hours from here.
I think it's
closer to like 5 hours, 6 hours. Anyways, the witch in Gatlinburg goes by many names. Old Crowface.
Oh!
The Smoky,
that's mean.
The Smoky Mountain Witch. And the Mountain Bird Mother. That's right.
Where do they come up with these names?
You'll see. Her most popular name, though, is the Gatlinburg Witch. Now, it's not really clear who she was or where exactly she came from. She can most often be found in the White Oak Flats Cemetery, which is where they start the ghost tours at.
Oh, that's true.
Or I think they finished the ghost tours there.
I thought she said she could be found in the 420 building.
Yeah, no kidding. She's typically seen wearing a black cloak and a bird-like mask, like the plague doctors used to wear.
Yeah.
She's also a nesting witch.
She sits on somebody's eggs?
Sort of. This means that she grows items in her body. And then when it's time, she releases them.
Like what?
Well, we're getting to that.
Oh, sorry.
Do you think I'm going to mention that and not have something for it?
Oh, I don't know.
I'll make something up. All right. In this case, she uses a knife to let them loose. She's said to cut her own skin open to release crows. See, all the names are starting to make sense now?
Yeah.
Crowface, Mountain Bird Woman, or Mountain Bird Witch.
I don't know, but she's a badass.
So this letter dates back to the 1800s. It's from a man named Samuel. And Samuel actually wrote this letter to one of his friends, Jeremiah. And it's pretty interesting. In the letter, Samuel actually apologizes to Jeremiah for not believing Jeremiah's father when he claimed to have seen the witch. Samuel said that while he was out hunting, he ran across a woman bathing in a nearby spring. He probably thought, I wouldn't expect him to find this.
Sure he didn't. And of course he sat there and looked and, you know, whatever men do when they look at naked bodies.
Well, the woman stood up. She walked over to where her cloak was. She then, though, reached inside and pulled out a long blade from her cloak. Samuel watched as she cut herself several times and blackbirds poured out of her and into the night sky.
Well, that's bizarre.
Then she laid back in the water and bled out while she was humming a peaceful tune. So not bled out like died, but she just bled into the water. Samuel said, I was scared to death and I ran back home. He also stated that after that night, he would see her at the cemetery as she would always be watching him.
Oh, so she knew he was there.
Apparently.
Ooh. So. It's a good thing she didn't go after him. Wonder why she didn't go after him.
I don't know. Maybe she didn't feel the need to have to.
Yeah.
He got the point.
Well, I mean, I'm sure she's probably, her body's tired after releasing all those crows.
I'm sure. All right, Tracy.
Did they come out of her gut?
I don't know where they came out of. I knew you were going to ask that. I have no way of knowing that.
Well, you act like you know me.
He said she cut herself in several places, so it could be anywhere.
Wow. Very interesting.
They might have flown out her butt. I don't know. All right. So I told you I had a couple of stories, and these stories are going from memory. So the first one, we're in the late 1800s in Virginia, mountains of Virginia. All right, so here's how the story goes. We're in the early 1800s, okay?
That's where we always are.
I know. So this woman from overseas, I believe she was from England, she moves to this little bitty small town. She's by herself. Nobody knows anything about her. She just appears one day. And she decides that, you know, hey, I'm going to try to make friends here.
Good.
Well, there was one woman who, you know, kind of became friendly with her. And she found out that she was from overseas and all this stuff. Well, she was an outsider to this little town. And most of the people didn't take kindly to outsiders. So, I mean, they got their close little knit in these little towns.
Right.
So, besides that woman, nobody would associate with her.
Aww.
And it really hurt her feelings.
Well, it would hurt my feelings, too.
So, she said, you know what? I'm going to try to get to know these people. And she would talk to, go up to the individual doors, and these people would just shut the door in her face sometimes. Aww. They wouldn't talk to her. They would snicker behind her back. And she's like, you know what? What should I do? They've got the church. And the pastor at that church, the preacher, was approximately 167 years old. He was very old. He was very old. And she thought, you know what? I'll go talk to the preacher. And when I do, that everybody else will see the preacher talking to me, and then they'll talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
So she sees people passing by her on the way to the church. She's kind of waiting. She gets up to the church, and the preacher's there talking to five or six of the congregation. And she starts to try to talk to the preacher. Well, when she does, they start singing these hymns, biblical hymns. And they're singing it to drown her out. So she's like, well, two can play that game. So she talks louder. And they sing louder. Well, then the preacher kind of motions for the congregation to just kind of tone it down a little bit.
Right.
So she thinks, finally, we're getting somewhere. And he turns around and he looks at her and says, hold your tongue, witch. No one wants to hear anything your blasphemous self is saying.
Nuh-uh. He didn't know her from a hole in the ground.
She was devastated. She looks over. The girls, some of the girls and the guys are kind of snickering and they're pointing, and she starts crying and she turns around and she can hear them laughing and start singing again. And as they start singing, she turns around and she says, I hope you enjoy what you're doing. Hope you enjoy all that singing and stuff, because soon that's all you're going to have, each other and your singing. And then she supposedly went home and must have packed or something and just left, because nobody saw her again after that.
That is not a church I'd want to go to.
Now, let's fast forward to the early 1900s, probably 80 years later. You got these two brothers. They are going to see some of their kinfolk. And back in during this time, this was before there were cars were plentiful and not everybody had a horse. So if you had to go somewhere, you had to walk. So they were taking a long walk to get to wherever their kinfolk were. It got late, so they decided to go ahead and stop, camp out for the night, build a fire. And they did this. In the middle of the night, one of the brothers hears something. And he tells the other brother, I think I hear some talking over there. And it's like 1 o'clock in the morning, and there shouldn't be anybody out in the woods. That to be making this, doing this talking and stuff. So they look out over top of this little ridge area where they were. And about 100 yards away or so, they see an old, dilapidated church. I mean, it is run down, falling apart. So one of the brothers, he walks over to see what the deal is, because he can see some lights and stuff on it there. Mm-hmm. And he looks, his brother's just watching him, but he's looking in, and then he just takes off running. I mean, he's tripping over limbs, falling on the ground, getting back up and running, and he just takes off. His brother's like, I don't know what the hell happened, mm-hmm. but hey, I'm sure he'll be back. Well, he doesn't come back.
His brother didn't come back?
No. So the one brother who stayed decided to go ahead and continue on to their kinfolk. And when they got there, there was his brother.
I was going to say, he left without his brother?
And he's like, I mean, well, he waited all night. What are you supposed to do?
Go look for him?
It's a big woods, big area of forest.
Just wasn't in the mood.
So he said his kinfolk, he sees his brother. He's like, what in the world happened? What happened to where you just took off? He said, well, I went over to that church. And there was a bunch of people in there having church. He said, and? He said, they were all dead. And I saw them and I froze. I couldn't move. And he said, and then they looked at me and they saw me. And then he said, I about crapped my pants. And then they started singing these hymns. And I just started running.
I could just see all those skeletons or dead people singing the hymn.
So.
She got him, didn't she? Yep. That is outrageous that somebody would actually treat somebody like that. You know what I'm saying? Especially mm-hmm. like a preacher. Well, yeah. Good, that's what they get.
So I have another one. This actually takes place in Arkansas. This one, again, is not in the Appalachians.
Okay.
Appalachians. So I knew I'd screwed up before.
That's all right.
So this one's not there, but so the story is told basically from a 12-year-old's standpoint. So this 12-year-old lived with his grandmother, and they would go walk into wherever, church to the town or wherever, and they would always have to walk by this really old house. He said the house was kind of falling apart. It had a little shed attached to it, and it had like a little breezeway mm-hmm. connecting it to where you could walk to the shed back and forth without getting wet during a storm or something. And he said every time they would walk past, he would get really scared. And his grandmother would never talk about the place, but she would always stop and say, bless her heart. Mm. And so they keep walking. Well, eventually, he asks his grandmother, why are you always saying bless her heart when we go by there, but you don't ever tell me anything? And she said, well, years ago, she did something really bad. And she said, she's lived a hard life, but everybody says she's a witch, and we just stay away from her. Well, one day, the little boy is sitting in his house, and he says, you know what? I want to go to that house and check it out.
Yeah.
But I can't tell my grandma. All
right.
So I'm just going to tell her I'm going to go out playing, and I'm going to that house. So he goes to the house. He walks in through the front gate. He goes to the shed area. Mm-hmm. As he's in the shed area, he's looking around and then he hears something. He turns around and it's a woman, an old woman, but she's got a face of a man. Now, I don't mean she looks like a man. I mean, she's like got the face like she is cut off of a man and placed on top of hers, like Leatherface from Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Wow. Well.
And she grabs his arm and it freaks him out. Well, about that time, somebody else snatches him. It's his uncle. His uncle. His uncle had been walking that way, walking towards their house to visit when he saw the little boy.
Go
into her house. And he grabs the boy. He yanks him. They run out of the yard. And he looks at the old woman. He says, I'm sorry. We'll never do it again. Please forgive us and take pity on us. And then he leaves. Well, then the little boy is asking the uncle, I mean, I don't understand. Grandma won't say anything. He said, okay, here's the story. Years ago, she was married. And her husband was not a good man. He would beat her. He would always have food for him, but he would let her starve on occasions.
Oh, my.
Didn't matter if she had food. He was always going to have food. He made moonshine, but he never sold it to make any money. He drank most of it himself. And then he would go out to the bar in town, and he would hang out with his friends and not spend any time with her. Then he'd come home drunk and just be mean to her. And one day she got tired of it. And he came home. He was drunk. He started to be mean. And she killed him. And she cut his face off. She then took his face, put it on, and she walked down to the bar to where all of his friends were and said, you guys should have the same thing happen to you.
Oh, my Lanta. I mean, I can't even imagine with a... Oh, my God. That's crazy.
So these guys, they call the law.
Mm-hmm.
And they tell them what happened. Well, they go up to investigate, but they can't find a body. They can't find a face. Of course, you know, we're talking, you know, early 1900s.
Yeah.
And the woman says, you know, I don't know what happened. She said he went out drinking and he just never came home. And they just kind of couldn't find anything, so they never could peg anything to her. But everybody in town knew what happened. But the police never arrested her or anything.
And wait, did she have his face on?
I don't think at the time the police came, she probably didn't.
Oh, I was going to say, damn, that's some balls.
Yeah. So that's the story on that. So then the little boy, he said that he don't know if it was the uncle's apology or what, but whenever he went by there, he didn't feel scared anymore because he felt like that maybe she knew he would never mean her any harm, and that was the end of it.
That is messed up.
So that's our stories on mountain witches.
Wow. Boy, he got his, didn't he?
Yeah.
Drinking all that moonshine and not saving none for me, that's what you get.
There you go. Letting her starve while he ate.
Yeah, he didn't sound like a very pleasant person to be around.
All right, guys, we're going to take a quick sponsor break, and then we'll be back to update you on a couple of things. All right, Tracy, first and foremost.
I love you.
I love you, too. We got to hang out with Diane and Kelly today.
We did. So much fun.
From History Goes Bump. We got to go eat, and they brought us a super nice housewarming gift.
They did.
And we thank them very much.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, we have two live shows with History Goes Bump. And the first one is rapidly approaching. We're about a month away.
Damn. That's quick.
Yeah. It's the 27th of April. It's in Casadega, which is a spiritualist camp. And we're doing the show inside of the restaurant at Hotel Casadega, which is reportedly pretty haunted. And they have great food. So here's the deal. I didn't realize that how many people don't know where Casadega is, because we just been saying Casadega.
Mm-hmm.
So just so people know, and there's only a handful of tickets left yet. So if you're going to get them, you want to go to our website and snag them fast. But Casadega is about 20 minutes from Daytona Beach and about 30 minutes from Orlando.
Nice.
And you don't have to stay at the hotel. I don't even know if they got rooms available for that night, but mm-hmm. You can try. But the point is, make a weekend out of it. Come down, go to the show on Saturday. It's an early show, 12 to 3. And then you got the rest of the night to either go to Orlando or go to Daytona or St. Augustine is literally an hour and a half. About an hour and a half from there. So there are so much stuff that you can do when you come down that weekend. But we've never really mentioned how close Casadega was to all the big stuff that you could do in the area.
Yeah, it's great. We hope to see you guys there. And yeah, like you said, there's a lot of stuff to do. Oh my gosh. You just can come down here and have the best weekend ever.
And like I said, so what we can do is after the show, anybody who wants to go up and see the witch's chair, I mean the devil's chair,
mm-hmm.
which is 2 minutes up the road, 3 minutes up the road at that little cemetery, we can go up there and all do that together.
Nice.
So that'd be kind of cool. And that'd be obviously just included with the ticket. We'll just all go up there together.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
I don't know if they'll all fit in our car though.
Yeah, we'll probably have to drive separately. August 17th, we're having our 8th birthday party show in St. Augustine on the beach. And I still haven't posted it yet, but if they do have a bunch of special room rates for us. Call Beecher's Lodge, and you'll be able to look up the Beecher's Lodge in St. Augustine. Call them, and I think we've got that listed on our website,
okay,
too, on the thing.
I
think
Beecher's Lodge is going to center.
Call them and tell them you're there, you're wanting to book a night or two nights for the show, and they'll have special room rates for you. They've got rooms that are like studios. They got one bedrooms, whatever. They got a variety for us. But that would be awesome.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Also, we're running out of time on the cruise if you want to make payments on it, because we're already to April almost.
I know, right? Tomorrow. Was there March 31st? Is there 31 days of March?
Yeah, tomorrow's
right?
Still March. So April 1st is Monday.
Yeah, guys, come on. We want to have a whole bunch of people on the cruise. We had such a blast the last time and, you know, just got to meet so many people we know through the show or whatever, but not had met them in person. So we had so much fun. And we hope you guys will come join us.
This one's a 5-day cruise instead of a 4-day. Mm-hmm. It's leaving out of Galveston, so it's centrally located. And like I said, it's going to be a blast. Couple stops in Mexico, couple of days cruising at sea.
Yeah.
That's when we'll do our live show, is one of the days we're cruising, so it won't interfere with anything else going on.
Right.
And we try to schedule those things when there's nothing else going on. Like, if there's a comedian that night, we're not going to do a show during their time. We'll do it during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And that way you get a chance to
see. Well,
we do
have the Ohio boys, so they're pretty comedic. Is that a word?
This is true. Yeah. Comedic is a word. But yeah, us and Ohio, it's going to be a blast. Go to our website, hillbillyhorrorstories.com. There's a whole tab that's nothing but the cruise. It's videos of what each room looks like. So if you're not sure which room, there's complete videos showing you all that. There's a video that shows you the actual ship and everything they got going on, which it is a Mariner of the Seas.
Is that different than what we had?
Yes, it's a different ship. So it's going to be a blast, but there you go. So that's what we got for you. Tonight, we are completely done with this episode.
We are. I would like to mention that we had some reviews this week, and we so appreciate you guys. Mojo Lobster, you never let us down, sweetheart. We appreciate you so much. Kay Cummins and Jason B., same for you guys. You've always come through. And all of you all that have left a review, thank you from the bottom of our hearts, because that's really... it's working. It's helped loosen us up, you know, so people can see us quicker and things like that. So thank you so much. And we had Julie Scott was our Patreon this week. Thank you, sweetheart, for taking the time to do that. And we appreciate you so much. So keep those reviews coming, because we love them.
A couple things that I want to end on. And this should have been at the beginning, probably both of these. But we just want to say that in our thoughts and prayers for everybody that's been affected by the bridge collapse
in
Baltimore.
Yes.
Absolutely horrible story.
Yeah, very, very sad, very scary to just think that could just happen to anybody, really. Yeah.
And a big thank you to all the rescue workers that tried so valiantly to save as many lives as possible.
Oh, my gosh, I can't even imagine. But yes, thank you guys for that. We are recording this on Saturday. So I hope you all have a blessed Easter Sunday and that the bunny rabbit is good to you.
Yeah. Okay. And one last thing. Julie Gilder has been a listener of ours from over in Great Britain from the very beginning.
I know. Bless her heart.
Had a shirt made for her that said number one fan.
Aww.
On the back. And but she is really having a rough time right now. Her mother is extremely sick with cancer.
Oh, no.
And she's in the hospital, and it just doesn't look really good right now. But I just want to let Julie know that we're thinking about her.
Of course. Many prayers to your mommy. And I hope things will get better for her. And if you need to talk to anybody, you know, or me or Jerry, please feel free to call us, because you are a girl and we love you so much.
Absolutely. All right, guys, that wraps it up for us. We will talk to you next week.
Bye, guys. Love you.